Welcome to the WWE Podcast, a weekly show dedicated to discussing the current pro wrestling product through all of the good.
AJ Styles is the WWE World Champion!
And the bad.
Number 30. The Big Dog is gonna hunt!
The WWE Podcast reviews every Raw, SmackDown Live, and WWE pay-per-view event, giving an unfiltered opinion, even sharing some favorite wrestling memories.
Oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin, thought he'd come out here and give you a little present right from the bottom of my heart.
Oh! No! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Austin just gets stuck in the stunner!
And now, here's your host, the man who doesn't play a bad guy on TV and loves sharing his passion for Roman Reigns' heel turn, Matt Corsell.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. This is your host, Matty C. And listen guys, my apologies. It has been a crazy couple of weeks with my site being totally revamped. I know I've been a bit of a ghost in terms of doing any kind of WWE commentary and my thoughts and opinions on the current product, but that doesn't mean I haven't been watching. Trust me. There's been just some technical issues, and with the site going live shortly, the all-new site, which will be, I promise, much more updated, modern, easy to use, user-friendly. It is coming, hopefully, by this time next week, if not sooner. But check my Twitter feed. It's at the WWE Podcast, and between each word is an underscore, so the underscore WWE underscore podcast. You can check me out there. Also, WWE Podcast on Instagram. That's right, I said Instagram. WWE underscore podcast. You can check me out there. Matt's Madness, as you guys once knew me, is now defunct. It's gone. Ceases to exist. It's no more. It's gone. So that is no more, but we are rebranded under the WWE Podcast. So WWEPodcast.com, you can check me out there, which right now references a lot of Matt's Madness stuff, old retro archive stuff, and that's going to be gone soon, as I mentioned. But check out my Twitter feed. That is where you guys will get the most up-to-date information. And again, I am still here. I promise. I'm still watching WWE very intently. And with that being said, there is a lot going on, obviously, with Money in the Bank. This Sunday, 2 days from now as I record this, there is a Money in the Bank pay-per-view as WWE continues their every 2 weeks of a pay-per-view schedule. And I believe we have a three-week gap now between Money in the Bank and Great Balls of Fire. And yeah, I know, that pay-per-view name is just ridiculous. It even sounds ridiculous. The logo's ridiculous. But nonetheless, we have the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view coming up, and it is going to be a hell of a main event between Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar. I've got a lot to say about that, too, shortly. And I have my official Money in the Bank predictions, which were not easy. Not easy to predict, and WWE's booking as of late has been challenging to prognosticate, and we're going to see if WWE continues their sometimes head-scratching booking coming up this Sunday night. So, without any further ado, without any commercial breaks, without any more of me ghosting and leaving you guys high and dry, let's get into the Monday Night Raw review. And Brock Lesnar opens the show after a video package from last week. And, you know, I would have liked to have seen a couple of things here in this segment. Number one is having a neck brace on Paul Heyman. It would have sold. It didn't have to be a hard neck brace, even a soft one. Soft neck brace. That way we would be able to see the effects of the coquina clutch on Paul Heyman, who's not a trained performer. You know, that to me would have added just a little something. It would have been a nice touch. And second is Brock Lesnar speaking, and I'm going to get to that in just a minute. Heyman says that he's here tonight to release the beast, or unleash the beast. I forget which one, but I have release. He calls Samoa Joe a dog, and how devastating the coquina clutch was. Again, neck brace would have been nice here. He says that he isn't man enough to put the coquina clutch on Brock Lesnar, and then Joe ends up coming out and stares at Brock briefly before they begin to brawl. So before we get to the brawl, again, Brock Lesnar speaking would have really added to the segment here. To me, it would have made it much... It would have made it feel more special because Brock rarely ever comes onto the mic, and Paul Heyman is his mouthpiece. Instead, Brock does what he always does when he comes there and stands there and looks menacing, gives a kind of a smirk once in a while, and stands there and bounces back and forth like his feet are on fire, or just stands there emotionless, stoic. And while that is effective, at times it's getting a little bit formulaic. And to me, this was a missed opportunity by WWE. Brock doesn't have to come out there and memorize, four paragraphs of what was written for him. He could have just come out there and said, Joe, you be the B word again. You guys know what it is. It's a PG show, but he could have said, he could have called him that name. And then he could have said, you've crossed the line, get your ass out here. Something to that effect, just a couple sentences would have been effective. And that was the right time to unleash Brock Lesnar on the mic. And now look, we still have 3 weeks of buildup. And there's still opportunity for Brock Lesnar to get on the mic and voice his opinion of Joe. And I do absolutely expect a sit-down interview with both men. Maybe together or separately. That is where Brock shines. That's where Joe shines. They could do it separately 1 week and then together the next week in sit-down interview. And then in the final week, you have advertising the fact that both of them are going to be under the same roof at the same time, which is what they will probably do because after the brawl, you can't really go anywhere else with it. So that's just a quick thing. Also, they're positioning Paul Heyman as the babyface here because he said that he would have understood why Joe did what he did if he had beef with him previously to the event that took place last week, but instead he just did it out of nowhere. So that's positioning and getting a little bit of sympathy for the Paul Heyman character. I'm fine with it. Made sense. So just a couple of tweaks here that would have really made this a really good segment. So let's get to the actual brawl. I mean, Brock and Joe take out security before Kurt brings out about 15 superstars to separate them, how they were determined or how Kurt convinced them to sign up for that task of, hey, look, Brock and Joe are probably not going to be able to be controlled by my rent-a-cops. If that happens, you guys need to be on standby ready for a possible backup to my rent-a-cop security. That kind of stuff is like, hey, Kurt is just, what's in it for the superstars to break them up? What do they care, But I get it, that they can't be controlled by anybody other than guys that are on their level. All right. But it was, it was shot back and forth. I think there's going to be a lot of physicality in this match. I'm looking forward to the match. Do I think it's going to be 5 stars out of 5 at Balls of Fire? I don't think so. I don't know how motivated Brock is. This is probably the most interesting opponent that Brock Lesnar has had since Roman Reigns back at WrestleMania 31. I think that is how big this match could be. The problem is that this match is at Great Balls of Fire, which is not exactly a marquee Big Four pay-per-view of the year. Rumble, Survivor Series, obviously WrestleMania, and SummerSlam. It's none of those. So it's kind of It's kind of the B pay-per-view, but it's an A-plus main event. Do I think that these two could have a rematch? Absolutely. But I think that the injection and inevitable return of Braun Strowman is going to make his presence felt at this pay-per-view. And so, unfortunately, I think this is going to be a one-off for the time being. But I ultimately do believe that Roman Reigns is going to be the guy that is going to take out Brock Lesnar. So one way or the other, does Brock go over clean? Is there interference? Some kind of screwy finish that still makes Joe look strong? It's very possible. But I think that Brock, I know it's an early prediction here, is going to remain the Universal Champion and only for Roman Reigns, unfortunately, which don't get me going on that. Is going to be the guy, no pun intended, to take that belt from Brock Lesnar. So that is just my quick thoughts on that. And let's move along here to the Elias Sampson guitar segment. And he's trashing Louisiana and Ambrose. Ambrose interrupts, and we get an Ambrose and Samson match. Not Samson, it's Samson. I don't know why they just don't put a P there, because it naturally just kind of flows with the way your mouth moves, right? Like Samson. But instead, it's Elias Samson. Anyway. So it wasn't the best match. Kind of slow at times. Miz comes out to distract Ambrose, gives Elias the win for his neck break from his neck breaker. I mean, I don't really know what to say about much of that. It was an okay match, a little bit. It was fundamentally sound, nothing epic or anything to write home about. But this is all about establishing Elias Samson in a credible role. As I said, he kind of looks like Seth Rollins, just a little bit more jacked up. So, I don't know. Just my random thoughts. Angle then tells The Miz that he isn't going to do anything about Dean Ambrose, and if he has a problem with Ambrose, to do something about it himself. Okay, cool. Somebody standing up to the talent. And as I was saying, I believe 2 weeks ago, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens when Stephanie McMahon makes her return. You know, when she's not giving out title belts to disabled kids and making WWE look like the softest brand since Sesame Street. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens when we finally get the return of Stephanie, which is inevitable. I hope he is not a pushover as Mick Foley was portrayed to be, and every other WWE superstar for that matter to be, in every segment that they were in with and shared with Stephanie McMahon to make them look like they have no balls. Point blank. So I really don't believe they'll do that to Kurt. But by the way, we didn't get any more progress in terms of that, the evolution of this mysterious texting that's going on between Corey Graves and Kurt Angle. At least it wasn't on the Hulu Plus version, so I don't know what the latest is on that. And as far as, you know, who's behind it, I believe Triple H, so it could lead to Triple H and Kurt Angle. I think that'd be very interesting, given the history between those two. I think they could do a lot, and Triple H is a very safe performer. I think his style would be very complimentary to Kurt's at this point in his career. I don't need to see him go against Brock and be put in a compromised position with Suplex City, where, you know, one wrong suplex could end up injuring Kurt Angle severely. I don't think that is a good opponent. I think that Triple H would be more than suitable, and I think that they could tell a great story. All right, let's see. We go on to a video package of Roman Reigns and just showing some random highlights, followed by a promo that Reigns is going to unveil his SummerSlam plans next week on Raw. I can't remember the last time WWE skipped a pay-per-view that's coming up to talk about the next pay-per-view. You know, beyond WrestleMania. They'll talk about Fastlane, but WrestleMania is the ultimate destination. You know, WrestleMania is the exception, but you want to always focus on what's next. Clearly, they have some kind of underlying story and reason for them skipping ahead a couple of months to SummerSlam and Roman Reigns injecting himself into there. My prognostication, word of the day, is that Roman Reigns is going to announce that he is going to face, or he wants to face, he's putting his hat in the ring to face the winner of the Universal Championship at Great Balls of Fire. So, just some food for thought there. But, of course, with the return of Braun Strowman, he's going to end up really throwing a monkey wrench into Roman Reigns' plans. So, just my thoughts. Just from everything I've heard in other podcasts, I think that is the correct prediction. So let's keep moving here. Bray Wyatt backstage promo leading to an entrance and an in-ring entrance focuses on Seth Rollins, and the crowd seemed pretty bored by this. You know, as they should be. Wyatt and Rollins, it's like they have nothing else to do. There's nothing else going on, so creative's like, just put them together. You know, they'll have a solid program. Nothing that's going to be intriguing. Just kind of like, hey, you're a babyface, I'm a heel, and let's just do this. The ultimate outcome isn't going to matter. And the fact that, you know, Bray Wyatt is talks in riddles, which even the wrestlers on camera have talked about that he talks in riddles, and it is unfortunately very distracting because it's intriguing, but you tune out. Why do you tune out? Because he never follows through on anything he says, and beyond that, you don't even know what he's saying half the time. So while it's intriguing, you're not engaged in the content because you can't decode it. You know, you need like a some kind of key or cheat sheet to understand what he's talking about. And I shouldn't have to do that. Wrestling. And I mean this in a sincere way. Wrestling should be mindless entertainment. I shouldn't have to overthink it. And I want to be told the story. I don't want to be told how to make the watch. I just want to be told what time it is. So I think that putting them together, it's, I mean, I guess it's fine. I mean, we've seen them do battle before, and we've seen Bray Wyatt do his cryptic in-ring speaking, or at least, you know, I'll give him this. At least it wasn't just him standing in front of an Edison light bulb in some backstage area with, you know, Halloween music on, speaking about, you know, eating souls and bringing people to hell and all this nonsense. At least he was in the ring conversing back and forth with a wrestler. So that was at least a change. But I wasn't very intrigued. I mean, I'll follow the story. I don't hate it. It's just kind of meh. That's how I feel about it right now. So we'll see if they can change that. But right now it's just kind of flat. And he's talking about why it says that if you take my name in vain, you will fall. Okay. Well, all right. Sure. Yeah. And then Wyatt does his magic tricks. The lights go out and comes back on and telling Rollins that he may have slayed a king, but a god lives forever. And does his overused laugh that... It doesn't do anything for me because he has nothing to laugh about except the fact that he has yet to follow through on anything he has said ever. So that's about the only thing laughable about Bray's character. And look, I'm a fan of Bray Wyatt. He is just a victim of terrible long-term booking and short-term, for that matter, of the fans have been educated. WWE has educated the audience. Bray Wyatt's a cool, he's a great wrestling character. He's a character. Okay, well, in order for me to give a damn about your character that you've created, I need to see him follow through on just a couple of things he said. And for once, have Bray Wyatt win a feud, a blow-off, not a match on Raw, not just the first match of the series, but the final match. Make him credible. Or I do not believe in anything he's saying, and I'm turned off. Add to the fact that you don't know what he's saying half the time, and you have the recipe for a downward slide, and that is what, unfortunately, we're seeing. So we'll see. Well, you know, I'm not giving up on Bray. You know, just a good couple of months could totally turn everything around, but that's what they've done with Bray in the last few years. So, okay, let's move along to something that is even worse. And I shouldn't say worse, because Bray and Rollins was not terrible. It just was a little flat. What really kind of chapped my ass, that's PG, right? I think hell, damn, crap, and ass, that's PG. So I said it all at once. So yeah, I believe it's PG. Anything beyond that is TV-14, and by God, we don't do anything TV-14. And speaking of TV-14 that we will never see on TV-14 is the Bayley character. Now, I'm going to really, really try here to not get fired up and hurt your ears, whether you're listening to this on your iPhone speakers, in your car, on your Android, on your Windows phone. Do people still have Windows phones? Or your iPad, whatever you're listening to this in, and you got your headphones on. I'm going to try to really contain my voice on this. It is almost as... I'm almost as fired up as I am about a Roman Reigns heel turn about this specific issue, and that's with Bayley. The sit-down interview with Corey Graves and Bayley. This, to me, when it started, the first few seconds, or at least the first 30 seconds, I said, okay, cool. We haven't really seen Bayley in this setting. Corey Graves does an excellent job doing these interviews. He's done it with Kurt Angle. He's done it with the Hardy Boys recently. And now Bayley. He's done it with Samoa Joe. He has a great rapport and presence with the interviewees. So I said, hey, cool. This is going to be an awesome opportunity for Bayley to rebuild her character, to really maybe change course on her character, just rebuild and repair her character from the damage. And it's damaged after the way that she won the women's championship, the way that she, even more importantly, kept the championship after a compromised win. The fact that her promos have felt uninspired, rehearsed, and empty. Her in-ring performances have not been bad. She's had a few botched moments, but you know what? Who hasn't? It's her character and the booking of her character that somehow WWE has taken from NXT that was wildly successful and completely turned it on its head and done the exact opposite of what you want to do for a character that fans can believe in and get behind. So, with that introduction said, we get to a Corey Graves interview with Bayley. And Bayley proceeds to say, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, that she is not here to put bruises on people's backs or to inflict pain on people. She is here to put smiles on people's faces. Are you effing kidding me? She's here to be a conduit for happiness and making sure people are smiling and making sure that she's going to give the little girls who watch her hope that and proof that they, if they put their mind to it, they can do anything. There is so much really effed up, and I really want, and I do not like to swear a lot, but in this case, I really am biting my tongue to the point of almost bleeding. You cannot do this to the Bayley character. Well, you have to have, if we're supposed to believe in the Bayley character, I need to see some fire. This did nothing other than make Bayley look soft. It did nothing to repair her terrible booking of being dominated by Alexa Bliss, not being able to pull the trigger on hitting Alexa Bliss with the kendo stick, not being able to stand on her own two feet, grow a pair, and be able to stand up for herself, and when she's pushed, to push back. You can't have a character that I'm supposed to get behind that is almost cowardly. Not that she is backstabbing and conniving, but one that doesn't stand up for herself, doesn't have a spine, can't grow a pair, and can't give back what is given to her. You can't have a character like that. And then to blatantly say, transparently say to the fans, hey, you know, I'm just here to make people smile. I'm here to make sure the little girls can look up to me and I can be their role model. That makes me want to vomit for the next few hours and then pass out. Like, that makes me want to stop watching wrestling. That is the exact problem with WWE, except they brought it to the forefront. And there's a lot of guys on the roster that the WWE does this to as well. Roman Reigns, just in a very different way, and they make him try to be this role model and this really tough guy. But at least it's a little bit hidden, and they don't transparently say it, although I don't even want to mention Roman Reigns. I'll probably pass out of yelling, and that's not what I'm going to do here. But with this character and Bayley, they have really effed up. And this was a huge, huge missed opportunity and the exact opposite of what you want to do with Bayley is to say, yeah, you know, like at Extreme Rules, I just couldn't get extreme. I'm not here to hurt people. I'm here to make sure people get hugs and feel good, and I have a role model. I just can't believe they did this. This made her look soft, weak, not, inadequate, and everything Alexa Bliss said about her made it feel true, that she's nothing more than a little girl on the roster. Instead of Bayley rising up and showing some fire, she was tamed. Tamed and put in a cage and with her tail between her legs said, yeah, you know what? Like, I really don't. That's not me. I'm here to be me is what she said. I'm here to be me. This is, to me, the reason I'm so fired up about this, yes, this issue in itself is a huge problem with Bayley, but this is a company-wide problem. of people of WWE trying to make it look like they are just the role models of the future, that they have little kids, little boys and little girls that they have role models that they can look up to. And oh, we're here to put smiles on people's faces. Are you kidding me? You can put smiles on people's faces without saying you're trying to do it. So this segment made me want it was cringeworthy to the point that my blood was boiling over just how frustrating it is as a fan to want to now cheer this character. I am completely against Bayley now. They have gone to really excited when she debuted with Sasha Banks at Battleground last year. I believe that was when she debuted in WWE's main roster as her surprise tag team partner, to slowly being cooled down and cooled down and cooled down. And the crossroads was her winning the championship and keeping the championship under very controversial circumstances. And then her not being able to get extreme. And my God. By the way, guys, is hitting someone with a kendo stick that already hit you twice, just hitting with a kendo stick, is that really extreme? Is that really how extreme is defined now? A single shot with a kendo stick? Saying you would do anything to keep this championship and then not backing it up. It's making her look soft, weak, inadequate, and someone I do not want to get behind. If you can't get behind yourself, I am not going to get behind you. You don't believe in yourself, I'm not going to believe in you. If you don't believe in yourself, and that's the character that they've created, I'm not going to get behind you because you want to be a role model for little girls and just make everyone smile. And you're ridiculously stupid Bayley buddies that Byron Saxton made into a complete joke and made it look like a cartoon was coming out every week and made me want to cringe every time he said it. You add all that up and top it off with this cherry that we got last week with the whipped cream on top that Bayley said herself she can't get extreme. She's only here to put people's smile on people's faces and be a role model, and you have the recipe for disaster and the complete collapse of the Bayley character that we once knew and loved in NXT. It is now gone. You will now see Bayley become less and less supported at shows. It's going to be the Roman Reigns effect on Bayley. Mark my words. All right, I think I did pretty good there, net yelling, but boy, let's move on, because I'm going to go in circles. Rhino and Heath Slater versus Miz and a bear. Yes, a bear. This is bringing back really bad memories of the Adam Roses of the world when he had that rabbit that actually competed in a match. Corey Graves was being fed lines, you could tell, from Kevin Dunn or Vince McMahon himself, talking about how he spends most of his time preventing forest fires. It was an abomination, an embarrassment. Miz was the only story here is that Miz accidentally knocked his wife off the apron as Ambrose was actually discovered to be the bear, but not at first. I guess there was a switch out. I don't know how that worked. The cameras never showed it. It just went on way too long. It's just, this is the worst kind of sports entertainment right here. This is the worst. When you have it's beyond sports entertainment. It's eye-rolling, channel-changing, cringeworthy. Pick your adjective, pick your phrase, and that is what this was. I'm not trying to be negative, guys. I feel extremely passionate about this, about both segments here with Bayley and then this a bear competing in a match. It undermines what the guys and gals are doing out there. It takes away from the legitimacy that you can just throw anybody out there who's in a bear costume in this match. It is disgusting. It's bull. It's crap. It's bull crap. It's both of them. It's a joke. This is what turns me off to be a wrestling fan. This is what makes me embarrassed at times to be a wrestling fan, is this kind of garbage. All right, let's move along. Something a little bit better. Enzo and Cass versus Gallows and Anderson. Cass once again found down backstage, eventually fights his way to the ring. Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson win with the Magic Killer and Enzo, and then go for it again until Big Show comes out and makes the save. And as Cass recovers, he sees Enzo and Big Show embracing and then gives them a look almost kind of like a jealous boyfriend. Kind of weird. But then Enzo then asks Show again backstage if he's the one who attacked Cass, and Show calls Cass soft and spells it out. So a Big Show and Big Cass feud is likely on the way, with Cass probably turning heel. That looks like the avenue they're taking.
We'll see. Hardy Boys versus Sheamus and Cesaro. 2 out of 3 falls for the tag team titles. Sheamus hits Jeff with the bro kick in the chest for the first fall. Boy, WWE, whenever there's a 2 out of 3 falls, they just like to get that first fall right out of the way. It's very convenient that that happens, right? Instead of it actually going, you know, 10, 15 minutes as per the typical length of time to come to a decision, whether it's submission, pinfall, DQ, whatever, they just like to get that first fall right out of the way. Too convenient. But nonetheless, Hardys get the second fall, and then both teams get counted out for the third fall. So still champions, Sheamus and Cesaro, as expected, and clearly this is not a program that is done, nor should it be. To me, this is a program that comes to a head at Great Balls of Fire. Probably a ladder match. Because Money in the Bank. Probably in some kind of gimmick match. These two teams are not done with each other just yet, and I'm fine with it. I think they go together very well, and I think Sheamus and Cesaro have come leaps and bounds from Mick Foley's claim to make them a team, and back in, 6 months ago. All right. Now let's move to SmackDown Live, guys. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. New Day opens the show and saying that, again, talking about WrestleMania in New Orleans next year. Talking about that's their goal is to be WWE Tag Team Champions walking in there at WrestleMania 34. Breezango, Usos, and Colognes all come out, and it just sets up the 8-man tag. New Day hits up, up, down, down on Primo for the win. That's the synopsis analysis of this match. It was a fine match. It was okay. It was just New Day hitting their finish for the win. Zayn continues his weird, excited, talkative, annoying but doesn't know it character whenever he's in six-man tags. I don't know what that's all about, but it's not doing any favors for his babyface character. Zack Ryder returns backstage with Mojo Rawley. The crowd popped fairly big for Zack Ryder standards anyway. Naomi versus Tamina. Naomi wins via split leg and moonsault. Lana then attacks Naomi from behind, and she hits her assumably hits her finish on Naomi as she stands tall with the women's title belt. So I have predictions coming just in a moment. Randy and Jinder face to face. Really, unfortunately, you know, I'm a fan of Jinder. I know people have said that they've really screwed up Jinder's title reign. No, they haven't. No, they haven't. Listen to the crowd. They're making noise for Jinder, booing him. I think Jinder's doing a very good job. Is he doing an outstanding, jaw-dropping job? No, but I'm enjoying what they have done with Jinder. I'm a fan of it. I know many people aren't, but I like it. It's a change. How boring is it if Randy Orton is champion? I'm sorry. We've seen that, been there, done that. It's more interesting when you have a guy that comes out of left field and is champion. And by the way, he's the evil foreigner. I know they've gone to the well every time. You know, every time they go to the well, it works, though. You know, the evil foreigner comes in and takes the championship belt, and you want to see somebody take it off him. It's a tried-and-true wrestling 101 story, folks. And by the way, when the hell is Jinder going to get rid of his laryngitis? I can't really hear him on the mic. You know, his first week that he turned heel and won the belt, or won the that number one contenders match, he was really intense and loud on the mic, and it's been like 6 weeks now, and what's wrong with his voice? It's to me, it's taking away from his promos. But on top of that, this is a really scripted promo by Jinder. He seemed kind of like rushed and, you know, forgot a line here and there. I get it. It's challenging to remember all the crap that they put in paper and you're supposed to remember. But to me, it felt like he was reading instead of feeling the promo. And that took away from a little bit of it. But Orton's music hits and the Singh brothers head towards the ramp to confront Randy, but he appears instead behind Jinder, who's still in the ring, and he hits an RKO. I liked it. Why? Because finally, Jinder gets his on SmackDown Live. I've been waiting for an RKO and for Randy to finally get one up on Jinder, because they've built a lot of heat, and they blew it off just a little, but not to the point of, I don't need to see the pay-per-view Sunday. They blew it off to the point of, I liked it, now I want to see him do it and reclaim the championship. So I liked it, mission accomplished, the crowd popped really big for it. Kevin Owens backstage makes a good case to Ziggler and Corbin why they should team together, and not just tonight, but at Money in the Bank. He seemed to convince both men. He plays peacemaker here. Natalya versus Charlotte. Charlotte wins with natural selection after a fairly competitive match. Not sure. I guess it's, guys, wait, it's all about momentum. Momentum's on the line, like it's some kind of prize to be won. Give me a break. That's just the buzzword in WWE right now. Well, fans say nothing's on the line. Damn it, momentum's on the line. Remind them momentum. Except the fact that we've been educated, momentum means crap. There's no such thing as momentum in WWE, because in a split second, it goes back the other way. So momentum does not exist. Okay, so you can dictate that to me all you want through the microphone, and have your at least 15 times mention the word momentum per WWE program, but I don't buy it, and it's becoming distracting, and it's really annoying, actually. All right. Anyway, Fashion Files, Tyler Breeze was found attacked. He describes his attackers to Fandango, who draws what Tyler Breeze is dictating to him. And it ends up being stick figures, which I liked. And Tyler says, "Yeah, that's them." That was good. I'm enjoying the Fashion Files. You know, there have been some off weeks, but in general, I think it has given them an identity. And I think that is what they were missing outside of just being the Fashion Police coming out looking like rent-a-cops or strippers and just handing out fake violation tickets or whatever. So I like it. It's turned them into a babyface team, and really, props to both guys. Who, by the way, Fandango he's got a knack for comedy. He is the Santino Marella of 2017. He just has it. All right, Kevin Owens, Ziggler, and Corbin versus AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, and Shinsuke Nakamura. Sami Zayn delivers a haluba kick to Corbin for the win, who's now 3-0 against Corbin, by the way. The heels then take out all the babyfaces after the match with the ladder, but then, wait guys, there's a lot more. Corbin then attacks Ziggler and Owens, climbs the ladder. Shinsuke knocks him off and hits him with the Kinshasa. And as he climbs the ladder and grabs the briefcase, he stands tall. But here's the deal. I would not write this off as Shinsuke not winning. WWE has shown lately that their booking does not follow the typical script anymore, that they just almost do things against the grain. Just to shock everybody. And I understand, here's the biggest complaint. Oh, it's predictable. Everything's predictable. Here's the thing. I don't give a crap I don't care if something's predictable, if it's the right thing to do. I don't like something done just for shock value if it's the wrong thing to do. I like predictability if it's right. I don't like unpredictability for unpredictability's sake, if that makes sense. So if I see something coming, but it's the right thing to do, I'm all for it. And the fact that it's predictable does not override the fact that it's the right thing to do. So there's that. All right, let's get to my Money in the Bank predictions and preview. Just quickly run through it, guys, and then we will wrap this up. I'm going to get right to the top of the card here. Money in the Bank ladder match with AJ, Kevin Owens, Shinsuke, Ziggler, Zayn, and Corbin. I'm going to go with the winner is Shinsuke. Yes, we saw him grab the briefcase on SmackDown, and Wrestling Booking 101 would tell you he is now not winning on Sunday. But I think it's going to be a swerve, and Shinsuke wins. I really do believe Shinsuke Nakamura is going to be the winner here in what is going to be a high-flying, ladder-throwing, OMG moment type of match that could steal the show. No questions about it. So Shinsuke takes this. The women's Money in the Bank ladder match with Charlotte, Becky, Natalya, Carmella, and Tamina. I think Charlotte wins. But it's an obvious pick to me but it's the most interesting to me. So I'm going to go with Charlotte on that one. Now, Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton, WWE Championship. I think Jinder Mahal retains. There's no other way around it. It's in St. Louis. Doesn't matter to me. To me, that just gives Jinder more heat. Cena is waiting in the wings. And let's be honest, Jinder as champion hasn't been a failure. Regardless of what people think, I don't know why they believe it's a failure. And it's more interesting than Randy as champion, as I said. But how Jinder wins, Rusev is going to interject himself. He was with Jinder prior to Jinder breaking off and becoming champion. And Rusev has recently been cleared to return to action. So it also gives Randy someone to feud with after Jinder and Randy split. Makes sense. So I think Rusev is going to be responsible for Randy Orton losing. The Usos versus The New Day Tag Team Championship. The Usos clear, I think, win here. We've been there and done that with The New Day. We saw them champion for 100 zillion days. And I think The New Day and The Usos are just starting to hit their stride in terms of a feud. And The Usos are, to me, they are doing a good job. And to me, have the most, my God, do I dare say it, the most momentum going in real terms of getting over. So I think that The Usos retain their championships, as they should. Naomi versus Lana for the Women's Championship. I think Naomi retains. How she got the title match, how Lana got the title match to begin with is a bit ridiculous. Yes, you can say Naomi demanded it, but Shane could have vetoed it in the name of respect for the women's championship. You know, just because that the champion wants the title to be put on the line doesn't mean the GM or the commissioner has to say yes to that. I mean, why would you allow the championship, a prestigious championship, to be put on the line against somebody who has never even competed in a match on WWE programming? much less gain the opportunity to become number one contender for that belt. So it just, it doesn't make sense to me for Lana to win here. So there's that. I don't expect a very good show, but or a match. But here's the deal. What's more interesting to me than who's going to win is how does Lana perform in her very first match? That's, to me, the more interesting part here. Breezango versus the Colognes in the kickoff show. I'm going to go with Breezango. Why? Because it's the kickoff show, and you want to have the crowd get hot. And Breezango is obviously much more over than the Colognes. So there you go, guys. It's good to be back on the saddle here. Again, WWEPodcast.com is going to get a complete makeover shortly within the next week. I will be putting that out there on Twitter when it is complete. So check me out, too, on Twitter, as I said, under the WWE Podcast with an underscoring between each of those words. And also, give me feedback. What do you like about the show? What do you not like about the show? And I'd love to hear from you. So, guys, thank you. With all that being said, take care. Have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you next time.